Well, contesting scripture, rereading violent biblical texts with returning LRA soldiers. I was excited when I was listening to Kennedy speaking because he was almost giving my introduction. We are all talking about the same region, Northern Uganda, and we are all talking about the same war, the LRA war. Together with me in this project is Dr. Emma Wildwood, who is here with me, and also Professor David Maxwell, who is here. I think he's here. At least I saw him during the break. He's also a fellow in this college, and I should say I'm at the start of the CAPREX project, but I'm excited with the kind of collaboration, because for the past 6 weeks, I've been in Cambridge. I'm not the Helen that came to Cambridge. Not because the Helen that came to Cambridge was so bad, but because the Helen that came to Cambridge who has worked with Cambridge scholars and is a better Helen. My work is based on four presuppositions, which we can also call arguments. Kennedy was talking about the fact that most of the literature tends to lump these people together. And I want to say that for a proper analysis of war situations, I think there is need to pay attention to the ideologies which support the situations of violence. In the LRA case, scripture supported situations of violence. And this raises important hermeneutical problems with regard to a contemporary use of the Bible. It is the role of biblical scholars and theologians. Our role in this field is to see if scripture was used, it is being contested in a way, because we are looking at a situation where you go to church and they tell you that scripture will do something different for you. Here is LRA using it actually to push forward their agenda of violence. And at the same time, these people are going to come back to the same community to be reintegrated in the community after using scripture in a violent way. But when the same religious leaders are telling them that scripture is actually supposed to be useful for you. So through this project, I want to contribute to the community social healing and cohesion through suggesting a rereading of texts with a violent message in a way that is committed to peace and reconciliation. You'll agree with me that when it comes to scripture and being used in situations of violence, LRA is not the first. And I'm sorry to say it's not the last, but what is important is that various kind of solutions have been raised. And this is my angle in the way to use scripture. Kennedy was talking about the affected areas in Uganda. These were the areas that were really affected by the LRA war. And the camps that you are seeing in Kennedy's slides were basically in those areas. That does not mean that the rest of Uganda was not affected. I come from around here, but the war affected me. That's why I had to go to Northern Uganda. And I'm sure the rest of the world was affected. That's why Cambridge could actually partner with us in driving this research agenda forward. Currently, the situation of violence ceased in Northern Uganda, but it is very active in other parts of the region. The LRA started by going to Sudan. After Uganda, you can see there is no more active deployment of LRA, and even in South Sudan, it's not there. But as far as Central African Republic and Congo are concerned, the LRA is still very active. They are still abducting, and they are still using the girls in ways that we are being said, also the boys. We tend to forget them. So the project, I'm envisaging three parts and three articles. I was actually thinking Kennedy's brilliant, 7 articles in that. Wow. I'm just thinking about 3 articles. First is on the social, cultural, and political situation surrounding the LRA war. You'll agree with me that much has been written on that by our friends in the social science side, but they have tended to forget the religious aspects. So in my doing it, as you'll see on the next slide, I'll be pointing to how those affected the religious side. Secondly, it is the understanding of violent hermeneutics of the LRA. True, when the LRA say they want to restore the Ten Commandments, what do they mean? That's my question. And then rereading violent biblical texts with returning LRA combatants in Acheliland. It is important for us to reread them because they are coming back to a community which still actually adores them. The first article, or the first part of the work, I'm going to look at the discourses of peace and violence within Acholi traditional worldview. When I look at their worldview, what is it in their culture? What is it in their worldview that could have contributed to this kind of violence? At the same time, how did colonial expectations of the Acholi as soldiers influence their self-understanding? Because we have had scholars from the political sciences and the sociologists saying, actually, the LRA war has its roots in colonialism. So I want to show how those expectations could have affected the other side. And then as NRA took over power in 1986 under the current president, how did the situation in the North aid the creation of the LRA? When the NRA came to power, there was a song that was already sung that as it was in Luwero, that's the Luwero Triangle, so it will be in Gulu, that had two connotations. Gulu can be heaven, and at the same time, Gulu may have meant Northern Uganda. So when we see that there is a situation of violence in Northern Uganda, some kind of fighting back to show the people in the North that actually you're not the leaders as you have always assumed. Many being raped, their cattle being taken, and at the end of the day, the situation was hopeless for them. The situation became quite demanding on their side, so they really had to come up. So I will analyze how the situation did that, and so how did these factors encourage the religious beliefs and practices that opened the LRA violence. The call of Konyi. This slide explains to us how the LRA starts and what the LRA claims. When I talk about the call of Konyi, it reminds me about the call of Moses, because when I was actually interviewing most of my respondents, they tended to say that there is no difference between Konyi and Moses. And when I talk about Moses here, I don't mean any other Moses, but Moses in the book of Exodus, Moses in the Bible. So for them, they thought Moses and Konyi are the same, because just as Moses was called at Mount Sinai, so Konyi was called at Awere Hill. So I went out to analyze the mosaic motifs, which are not actually my focus today, but we can talk about it during tea break, and I will allude to them. A close look. We have had for years, since the era started in 1987, that their desire is to establish a government based on the biblical Ten Commandments. And actually, this desire gives you a hint into why they think Moses and Konyi are the same. Because the Ten Commandments we are giving to Moses, at the same time, they are given to Konyi. So this LRA desire, according to my respondents, they say that there is no difference between Moses and Konyi. The way history tells about Moses, to me, that's my respondent, it looks similar to what Joseph is doing. And another one said, the Ten Commandments in the Bible are the ones Konyi talks about because he's using the Bible. There has been a lot of doubt. When this Joseph Konyi talks about restoring the Ten Commandments, we always question which Ten Commandments. It is the biblical Ten Commandments according to the returnees. Those who have been recently on the BBC, allow me add a footnote here. All the pictures that I use here I've been allowed to use them because of the kind of agenda which we are driving to, using the scriptures for peace. All those who have been on the BBC recently, I'm sure you can recognize some of these faces. But this person you see here was the one in charge of girls and women in the LRA while in the bush. This person here was the controller. He was in charge of any kind of war that would take place, and he's the one who would choose who would go and who would not go. And it was up to him to control the war from wherever they were. And down here we have the catechist. And in the background we have Konyi's cousin. His face is a bit hidden, but we're just at the foot of the mountain where Konyi was called, and that's where we're holding the conversation from. The question is, what is the LRA's view of restoring the Ten Commandments? And when I talk about the LRA's view, I'm bringing their voices. What do they say they mean when they are saying we want to restore the Ten Commandments? Some of the returnees told me, we asked him that this is the Ten Commandments. One of them says, thou shalt not kill, a question that many of us have always heard. He said that this does not stop people who have sinned from being killed. That is why God also sent the angel to destroy Gomorrah. Even when Moses was taking the Israelites from Egypt to the Promised Land, some people misbehaved and they were destroyed. What does this literally mean? It simply means that in the LRA worldview, anyone who is being killed is killed simply because they have sinned. So they attach sin to killing as being a punishment of sin. Another one said, actually this is a young girl who was abducted at 6 years and she came back from the bush at 16 years. She told me, we were taught that the Bible teaches that somebody who does not obey the commandments must be killed. So when the LRA soldiers came and killed people in the community, it is only those they deemed not to have obeyed the commandments. And another says, as for killing, at first God himself killed the people by sending the flood during Noah's time. In this sample, we see echoes and references to other texts of the Old Testament to justify the violent actions. And when we hear these echoes, with my background in biblical training, Old Testament, I went out to analyze some of these texts, and indeed, it was discovered that the text says so. When you go to Exodus, at the close of the commandments in 24, it simply says, and anyone who does not obey should be put to death. What is important, though, is that the commandment tells us do not kill, but the Hebrew word used is totally different from the word which is used when killing is acceptable. And when I went out to study the Acholi worldview, I realized that even among the Acholi, there is a time when killing was deemed legal, what we can call the death punishment today. So in the same way the LRA think, they are not breaking that commandment that was set out, but they are actually carrying out the legal kind of killing. So what does this mean for Bible users in Acholi land? First of all, I say there is confusion and probably some of the things that Kennedy was raising, the mental health issues, it's a result of this confusion. There is confusion among the local Christians in churches. They do not know actually, because Konyi used the same Bible and the community is using the same Bible to give them hope. So which is which? At the same time, the biblical interpreters as well as religious leaders have a dilemma. A retired bishop, Onono Nweng, once said, one of the founders of Acholi Religious Peace Initiative, he said, Konyi uses the Bible to justify what he wants to do or what he does. You know, we are all facing the challenge as religious leaders. And it is this challenge that pushed me to go ahead to find a way of how can we deal with this kind of confusion within the community, because my interaction with the former LRA soldiers showed that they are somehow confused. And many of them have always asked me, but what does the Bible really say? So I thought, other than respond to a few people that I've been able to meet during my field work, I could come up with a model which can actually help others. So that's where the question is, what can we do? We can find one of the interventions. And in my intervention, I asked the question, how can the returning former LRA combatants reread texts with a violent message in a way that promotes peace? Why am I saying that he should read it in that way? Simply because most of the returning soldiers have expressed the pain that they have, that their life is wasted. But their life was wasted because they used the scriptures. So how can we use these same scriptures to actually find a way of helping them out? I go for an ethical model. And in that, I go for ethics of accountability. And I also emphasize that they should look for ethics within ethical parts within the text, but also read it ethically. So it's a two-way traffic, not only to read the text ethically, but also to look for some ethical aspects within those texts, because we try to reread together the Sodom Gomorrah account, and we looked out for what is ethical in that account. That is the model which I can we can talk about during the break, because I have a few minutes and I really want my collaborator to talk about something small, which is our mode of conscientization and re-education. Dr. Emma.
As Helen has explained, this is the early stages of our collaboration together. Helen has already enriched the life of the centre that I direct, and she's contributing to the seminars of the Divinity Faculty where I teach. And just to give you a bit of background, my own research interest is in cultural history of Christian movements in the Great Lakes area, including Uganda. So for me, this is an interesting study in the contested discourses within Christianity and the contextual influences. But what Helen and I hope to go on and do in the summer is to look at issues of re-education and conscientization to improve human flourishing in Acholi land, and to work with Acholi Christians, including the returned combatants, in order to break cycles of violence that are part of the ideological background and understanding the belief system as well as the practices in Acholi land. And by doing this, by rereading authoritative texts. And we're going to be looking more closely at our methodology, but there's a number of precedents using sort of a direct line from the educationalist Paulo Freire, and looking at what the University of KwaZulu-Natal and a centre there has done in terms of reading authoritative texts with local people and collaborating with the local population. Some of these ideas have been taken forward into reading biblical texts in areas where there's a high level of sexual violence in northeast Congo as well. So our research really is at the service of social cohesion and reconciliation. And in sort of biblical scholarship terms, we're looking at a hermeneutic that is life-fulfilling. I don't know whether you've got the...
Well, it was in the past one.
Okay.
The life hermeneutic.
So that's what we are going to be working on in the next few months, so that when I visit Helen in June, July time, we have a project to work on among the Acholi.